This is the Unbreakable Stories podcast, where we share stories of people just like you who have overcome adversity, struggles, hardship, and the setbacks in life or business on your way towards achieving success. It is through these unbreakable stories that will motivate, inspire, encourage, and empower people just like you to believe that if it is possible for someone else, it is possible for you. And now, here are your hosts for this episode, Terry Thompson and Bonnie Rose, the A-Coach.
Bonnie, how's everything going? It's great to see you.
Things are great, Terry. How are they going with you?
Oh, man, everything's going absolutely well. So super excited about this weekend here. And I know we got a great topic here. We're going to talk about the future of education and how it's changing. And, you know, I know the last year and a half, almost 2 years now, education has really changed, you know, with the whole lockdown COVID thing. You know, it really kind of created this virtual environment. And I'm not quite sure how things have been on your end, and we'll dive into that. But man, it's super exciting. You know, lockdown COVID really created this virtual environment of education and how we've taken things out of the classroom and put things into a virtual environment, which created a lot of opportunities. So what are your thoughts on the virtual environment and how education kind of changed here over the last year and a half?
So my thoughts may be a little different than other people, being that I have multiple chronic illnesses. I'm kind of more accustomed to spending a lot of time, more time at home than most. I try to kind of avoid situations where I was around a lot of people kind of pre-COVID. Mm-hmm. Like the higher like sickness seasons, like flu season and whatnot. But for me, honestly, in the beginning, it was a real blessing and it was a relief because I was more terrified. I mean, everybody was terrified of COVID in the beginning, but I knew when they were first started talking about it coming here, that if such a thing would occur, such as a lockdown, I was going to be one of the first recommended to basically stay home being high risk. Mm-hmm. I'm going to say, it did open up a lot of opportunity. There were, so I kept my son home from school all the way until March of 2021. He went back March 1st because it ended up becoming a situation for us where the health, the physical health risks were no longer outweighing the mental health risks because not being a teacher, not being his teacher, it's him being so far away from his friends and seeing a lot of his friends have gone back because we were in a hybrid model at that point. Mm-hmm. It was becoming really combative. And I think a lot of it was just that he missed his friends, you know, he missed being social with them. So I ended up sending him back in March when things just really weren't working out for us anymore. However, it does present a great opportunity for like sick days, for example, when they're not quite feeling well enough to go to school, but they're also not sick enough to kind of be stuck in bed. I know that our school, we just started back about a week and a half ago. And I'm pretty sure they have it built in where there's an opportunity to log the kid in. That's kind of what we did for the remainder of the school year last year. Like my son ended up with chicken pox of all things. My boys had chicken pox. So he wasn't sick where he couldn't get out of bed, but I couldn't send him to school. So mm-hmm. he to kind of check in and get his schoolwork and what. Yeah,
we recently had a situation like that. My son took a sick day last week, and you know it was quite interesting. So there was some things that were done online, some things that were done through Canvas, and then there was one teacher in particular that was like, "Well, you don't have COVID, so I'm not giving you the code to do a Google Meet." So it was kind of interesting. What you know, and I thought that was very interesting. I was like, "Wow, you know, you're really kind of cheating my son out of an educational opportunity simply because he doesn't have COVID. So now you don't want to give him the code to get on a Google Meet." So for me, I thought that was very interesting, but you know, you hit on a very key point there, and it was about no more sick days, no more missed opportunities. However, you know, there's a different perspective on some things here to where some teachers don't want you to miss opportunities. And because we have those tools at our disposal now, they take advantage of them. But, you know, there's that one instance of, you know, maybe teacher just didn't understand, didn't want to connect, didn't want to be inconvenienced, whatever label you want to put on it. And it was like, well, you don't have COVID. So now you're not, you know, you're not going to be a part of this class kind of a thing. I thought that was interesting.
Yeah. And see, I have mixed feelings about it too on this hand. I really think that it's important to teach our kids at a young age that it's okay to take days off where you're not worrying about anything. You're not feeling guilty for not getting your quote unquote schedule done. Because I know that's something a lot of us adults struggle with, is that when we're feeling sick and we're trying to rest, but then we're having the guilt because our bodies need the rest, and we're not actually resting and kind of recuperating the way we need to. But we also want to teach the kids kind of to do what they can. So it's kind of like a double-edged sword where it's a learning opportunity to teach our kids to learn, to listen to their bodies and listen to what it is that they can do. Like in the case of the chicken pox, neither one of my kids was feeling sick. They were running around like maniacs. You could, had they not had spots, we would have never had any inkling that there was anything wrong with them. So in that case, he was fully capable of paying attention, focusing. He didn't really need a whole lot of rest. But like you said, we're also still fairly new in this process. And a lot of people are really anxious to kind of go back to the way things were. And are very resistant to, like maybe in the case of this teacher, maybe he didn't understand, or maybe he's resistant to the idea of, you know, having kids. Maybe it's he doesn't think that he was sick enough to stay home, or maybe it was a case of you need to rest. You know, you shouldn't be on this Google Meet, but that's not really up to the teacher to kind of make that decision. It's up to the parents.
Right, I understand. Yeah, and it's also one of those things of, you know, the teachers are still struggling. They're still struggling to kind of figure this whole thing out, because I remember, you know, I remember last year, for example, when everybody got told to go home, it was like, we just need to meet minimum requirements. You know, we stopped testing, we stopped all these different things. Here's some exercises, parents, we really need your help, you know, to cover down on this, because we're struggling with technology. We're struggling with a virtual environment. We're struggling with keeping accountability. We're struggling with all these different things. And I remember very vividly some phone calls that I personally made to some teachers. And I was at a point, I was like, gosh, you know, if I got to teach you how to do your job, what do you have a job for? Kind of a thing. And I had those types of conversations. And, you know, and it wasn't that I was trying to be a jerk or anything. It was just, you know, we're all trying to figure out. And I had to really learn how to have compassion and empathy for the situation, because I know myself, I'm technologically savvy. I'm really good with software, really good with hardware. And I really had to kind of put myself in the shoes of the teachers, put myself in the shoes of the things that they deal with. That's normal for them in a classroom, but not necessarily normal for them in a virtual environment. And I think once I was able to move past that and have those hard discussions of, hey, what are you struggling with? And can I provide any type of feedback? And I think over the course of the year, you know, having those hard conversations with the teachers, I think we was all able to learn something and figure out how we could best help one another out.
I agree. The teachers they weren't trained to do these things, most of them. Mm-hmm. But what I found really interesting is that of everyone that had to adapt to this situation, the kids actually did the best job, especially the younger kids. Now, I have younger kids. I know your kids are just slightly older than mine. And then I also have much older kids. And it was interesting that, these kids were born basically with technology in their hands, most of them, kids that are, you know, K through 12 right now, or at least we're given it fairly young. I know I kind of held up with my kids. I was the oddball. I was like, you're not watching TV with my now 8-year-old. You're not doing this until my fourth one came along. I'm like, here, take this. Just give me 30 minutes. Yeah. Take care of your brother. But like they're innately, like I watched my five, he's almost five. He's learning the alphabet and how to spell using Google search I apologize. Let me take that back. He wants to search games on the Xbox. So he'll ask me how to spell this or how to spell that, or he'll hear a new game. And he wants to look it up on, you know, Google Play. So it is Google search, but he's not out on Google. Just to make that clarification for everyone. But he's learning how to spell using this technology, and he's learning how to memorize words. He can remember maybe not always what the letters look like, but the placement of the letters on a keyboard at 4 years old, 3 years old. Right. So I think the kids adapted much faster and much better than a lot of us adults, myself included. I was like, I don't know where this classes. And my son's like, well, mom, you got to go to this, because they had already had a little bit of experience with Google Classroom at school. And some of the other programs that they were using at school prior to the shutdown. But you're absolutely right about the compassion part, right? Like a lot of people were like, well, this is your job and that's your job. And this isn't my job. And I don't know how to do this. And there was a lot of people kind of running around with their hands in the air going, well, I still have to do my job, because a lot of parents were working from home at this point. You know, and once I think people realized that this was not a super short-term thing, we were going to be doing this for a while. Mm-hmm. And people kind of started speaking out about having more compassion and understanding, and people started thanking and being grateful to one another, teachers for parents and parents for teachers, publicly, verbally. I saw at least in our school district, I don't know how it was in yours, but there was a lot more, for the most part, more understanding towards the different parties that were involved. Mm-hmm. And the people that chose to look at it, I know this was hard for the kids. I'm not going to deny that. Like, it was definitely mentally hard and hard for them socially to be away. But as far as the technology and whatnot goes, I think they had it in the bag way more than some of us adults that are not technologically inclined like yourself.
Right. And I can agree with that as well, too, because, you know, my kids learned how to do certain things through technology. And once again, it's a tool, it's a resource. So when used properly, you know, there's an infinite or endless possibilities of how you can use that. So I know, you know, and it's not a matter of just not doing your job as a parent or as a teacher, but once again, using those tools to your advantage, because look, right there within the palm of your hand, you have more power than we ever did when you and I were growing up. So when you and I were growing up, we physically and manually had to do certain things. Whereas now we have those resources to where you can literally just type something in and have an answer right there in the palm of your hand. So it kind of leads to that question of, you know, and it's a burning question with a lot of older folks into the younger generation. It's like the younger generation is lazy. And I'm like, no, I don't really fully agree with that. I think that they're smarter with the tools that they have at hand, and they're able to access those types of things much faster, much quicker than we can. So I kind of beg to differ. It's like, are we smarter? Are they smarter? Are we more advanced? Are they more advanced? You know, so it kind of has this opposite type conversation. And I say, you know, it's very interesting. I'm like, well, you know, some of these younger people are significantly much more smarter than we are, because we still have that old classic old school thinking, so to speak. Whereas, my goodness, there's information everywhere now, and it's information that we didn't have years ago.
I think a huge thing here too that has changed is access to information. Mm-hmm. How to do a book report, probably same as you as a kid, or how to do any kind of research. We had to go to the library and look through encyclopedias, right? For those of you who don't know, encyclopedias are a group of books that are full of history and biology and all kinds of other knowledge. Just leave it at that. You can ask Google. Yeah, there you go. Ask Google what an encyclopedia is. But I think it's really going to change. I think we're going to see a huge shift, and at least if people kind of get on board with this, a shift in what knowledge is necessary to be understood and memorized, right? Mm-hmm. So that was another thing that we did a lot of, and I know kids are still doing, is memorization. It wasn't until later on where we were really taught to figure out how to get answers for things. Well, now that the way to get answers for certain things is Google, is an AI device, is searching on your phone, is searching on the computer, which is making a lot of memorization kind of obsolete, which is leaving, in my opinion, room for like memory bank room, basically, mm-hmm. for other things. And I'm really hoping we're going to see a shift especially with COVID, and teaching kids things like mindfulness. I know my son's second grade teacher, I get goosebumps every time I think of her, because she was teaching, she read a Wayne Dyer book. She did a lot of mindfulness type exercises with them, kind of in a way that it's not a spiritual thing or anything like that. It was, you know, breathing exercises, because she knew the kids would get anxious. But in a very subtle, fun, gamey sort of way, but teaching them those very important tools. It's 7 and 8 years old. Like, my goodness, can you imagine what we're going to cultivate in these kids by doing those kinds of things? And I think because all of us don't need to know, and I'm still terrible with geography, so like the capital of, I don't know, Arkansas is, which I have zero idea. They can get that information within seconds, and it's not life sustaining information, right? Whereas learning breathing techniques, in my opinion, in some instances really could be. So I'm hoping, whereas reading and of course English, well, language in general, mathematics, basic sciences, all of that thing, I think they're really important to introduce the kids to, so that they can kind of learn what it is they like to learn and then figure out what they want to do as they grow up. Mm-hmm. The demand for memorizing random facts is hopefully going to go out the window and be replaced with some other things, real life skills that these kids are going to need.
And that's such a great point because, you know, once again, I remember when I was growing up, random facts, it was like the memorization of random facts and how to do certain things or what to do, so to speak. So I think that when you teach kids how to learn versus what to learn, I think that really opens up the doors to how we can approach education. And I think that we're seeing this transition right now, right before our eyes, to where the future of education is, you know, it's currently changing. And I think that it's getting better. If you ask me, I think that the future of our education is getting better once we are able to get a grasp on the technology and the tools that are at our disposal now. But I also still think that we need to maintain some of that old school stuff. Like, for example, when you and I was going to school, you know, we learned, I took shop class. I learned how to weld. I learned how to type. I learned how to sew. I learned how to do woodworking. I learned how to cook. You know, I learned how to do all these things in school. And you know, nowadays it's like, is that even still relevant? You know, some of those basic life skills, you know, because you hear all these schools talk about, well, we have lack of money, we have lack of funding, we have lack of this, we have lack of resources, we have lack of whatever excuse, I think. And I think that it's really just more of a lack of resourcefulness and a lack of leadership. And I think that once you have leadership within the schools, they can, then that leadership can solve the resourcefulness problem, not a resource problem, but the resourcefulness problem. And I think that, you know, some of those things that are basic needs or relevant life skills will become at the forefront of schools these days, because I think that a lot of that stuff has taken a back seat. And I don't want to see technology fully take over, but I still think that we need to teach some of those basic life skills within school as well, too.
I completely agree with that. And I also think that we're going to see a shift in what does basic life skills look like, right? Mm-hmm. I think it is important to know how to have a very basic, you know, sewing skill, or, you know, to replace a button or fix a hole or something. Mm-hmm. Unfortunately, there's a lot of things that with the technological advancements, we have also have become a huge throwaway economy. Mm-hmm. Where, you know, and this is another topic for another day, but you get a lot of people get a hole in something and they toss it because they don't know how to fix it, or they don't have the time to fix it, or don't figure it was only $12. And yeah. And, you know, and in some cases I can kind of understand that if something's completely destroyed, but I think that, what you hit on a really good point, and it was not teaching kids what to learn, but how to learn. Mm-hmm. Because each of us innately has talents, abilities, capabilities, interests. And I think that although it probably would be more expensive to allow kids to expand, I'm wondering if it necessarily wouldn't be with, because we've got this technology now. I mean, you can YouTube video anything. Mm-hmm. You can learn how to do anything. It would be more so, I think where that cost kind of comes in is usually you have to have a teacher who's proficient in these different things, like woodshop or sewing or whatever. Mm-hmm. Because those things were kind of starting to phase out, finding someone to teach in the classroom. But wouldn't it be fun to have, like, I don't know, say at high school age, every 9 weeks, having a class where the teacher and the kids were learning something new at the same time with super mm-hmm. basic materials, like sewing, or like maybe that's not allowed because of safety reasons. But I think it would be really cool to have a situation where the teacher and the kids got to pick mm-hmm. something every so many weeks that they knew that they wanted to learn.
You know, like STEM classes, for example, is really big. There's a big opportunity in STEM. I know my son, he loves it. That's actually one of his favorite classes is STEM. So getting to do some of those engineering projects, for example, you know, I mean, you're really kind of learning how to use certain tools and technology doing that STEM. So I think that the future of STEM is going to continue to grow. And, you know, and I think that as more resources come within the school, more resourcefulness comes within, you know, individuals, I really believe that there's a strong future, especially within STEM type stuff. But what are your thoughts on private school, 100% virtual private school? Because I've seen an opportunity within that arise here within the last year and a half. And, you know, I know myself, I kind of have some thoughts. I'm not entirely too sure if I would do that, but I think that, you know, depending on certain circumstances, for example, because you do have some families that they might be more mobile and travel around a lot and want that private tutor or want that private education. I think that maybe having that online education, or at least that opportunity to where you can kind of do a hybrid, like you say, I think that being able to not necessarily pick and choose, but I think that depending on if you're in school, you can be there. And if you're mobile, then, well, you have that hybrid solution. What are your thoughts on that?
I look at it a lot like, as far as the picking and choosing part of it, I look at it like I look at homeschool. So I was homeschooled for about a year and a half. This was a really long time ago when homeschooling was just being like legalized here in Pennsylvania. Mm-hmm. And so technology wasn't part of the thing, but the learning what you want to learn part of the program was really cool because there were basic minimum standards that we had to follow. We had to turn in a portfolio and evaluation mm-hmm. at the end of the year. But other than that, like I could pick what parts of history I wanted to learn about. I could pick what kinds of science projects I wanted to do. And having that freedom was really cool because it was a lot like what we were just talking about. Mm-hmm. I think that having the opportunity there is a great idea for the kids that thrive in a situation where they don't need the in-classroom kind of structure and the teacher there in the room with them, showing them how to do things. I think we have to keep in mind that different kids learn differently, right? So for my son, for example, virtual just ended up becoming a huge distraction for him. And I think a lot of it had to do with also, like I said, where he could see the other kids sitting in the classroom and why can't I be there with them too, was a huge part of that.
Yeah.
In a situation where you as a family decide that virtual is the, I think that it's a great learning tool. I also think that so my older son, for example, did a lot of online classes his junior or senior year of high school. And because for him being in the classroom was more stressful than getting the work done at home. And he was way more efficient at just getting the work done at home. I'll just leave it at that. So I think it is it's a great opportunity for, especially I'm hearing, and I don't know the validity of this, but like millennials, for example, aren't buying homes as often. Like they're renting, mm-hmm. they're moving around a lot more. They're, you know, from city to city, state to state. And I think that because the school was private, I don't know how that works with state regulations. Like if you could move from state to state and stay in the same private school, I'm not familiar with how that works. But if it was something where you could do that, I think it would be super, super cool because mm-hmm. it would help keep the child, the family could move, but keep the child in a stable learning environment. Mm-hmm. Whereas the education would kind of follow them versus plopping down in this school and being at this place in a curriculum and then plopping down another school and being in this place in a curriculum and never really getting a full, you know, year of mm-hmm. learning. I could see that definitely being the best.
That actually happened to me. So I remember one year in particular where I went to three completely different schools in one year and it was challenging. I mean, it really was. And every school kind of has different requirements. Every state has different requirements. And, you know, and I remember going to one school where I had to have a certain curriculum of courses. And then when I went to another school, it was a completely different curriculum. And I had three options to choose from. It was like, if I chose, I think the work option, I only went to school for half a day. And then the second half of the day, I went to my job, wherever that job was. Well, I didn't choose that option, but there was kids that did, you know, if they went to work at McDonald's or they went to go work, whatever, they went to school in the morning, went home for lunch, and then they went to their job. Then there was the kids that chose the technical side of the aspect where they went to school in the morning to do basic educational type stuff. And then in the afternoon, they got on a bus, went to the local technical college, and then they learned technical skills, woodworking, welding, all these different types of technical things. And then there was the ones that was being prepared for college. They chose the higher education, algebra, trigonometry, chemistry, all these higher level type courses, and that prepared you for college. And so I remember that school right there, you chose your path. It was like, what do you want to do? So you kind of had to know what you wanted to do before you really done it, because that chose your educational path. And those ones that chose that career path, for example, well, they were kind of cheated out of that college path and weren't ready to go to college because they didn't take those classes. And now I often think about, gosh, if they wanted to go to junior college, community college, four-year college or whatever, was they ready for that? Well, maybe, maybe not, because they chose to work instead of preparing for that next level of education. Then you got the technical side of it, where I wanted to learn these technical skills, but yet I didn't get a job in that aspect. Well, now I want to go to college because there's a requirement for a degree. So once again, it can really lead down some confusing paths of, are we really preparing our kids for the future? And that was the reason why I interjected that, because are we really preparing our kids for the future?
That's really, that's a really good point. So I was an oddball. I'm apparently an oddball in a lot of different areas. I was the kid who took the honors classes. Mm-hmm. And did band and did soccer and somehow still squeezed in tech by smashing. They smashed my schedule together. And I went to something, a pilot program called AP Technical Academy. Mm-hmm. So I got to go to tech in the afternoon, and I got to split my tech time between medical, forget what it was called. It was a medical program, basically like learning how to be a medical assistant. And then I was also taking higher level math and science classes with a special teacher that was at the tech school. Mm-hmm. That meant I also took on a whole lot of extra out of school work that I was doing. So I had double and triple homework. But that being said, I think we're always going to be in this game of catch up, right? Mm-hmm. Because the teachers that we have in our schools right now, whether they're just starting out or if they've been there for 30 years, they're already at an age where they've done all of these different things, and technology and education is constantly changing. So we're always playing catch up. So unfortunately, say we put these ideas in place today, mm-hmm. by the time the kids that were teaching these things get to college, become teachers, find a job, and get in the schools, we're already 10, 20 years behind once again.
Yeah. It's always leapfrogging. I see that as being relevant as well too, you know, constantly being behind and playing catch up. It's a challenge.
Yeah. And I think, and then there's, you've got the whole political side of it, of getting funding and getting things approved. And like, maybe that's not political. I don't know how that works. I'm not really a political person, but I know that there's mm-hmm. processes that they have to go through to get things approved through the school board and through sure. And all of that takes time. And then you've got a whole group of people who are afraid of making those changes and who are resisting and against it because they want things to stay the way they are or the way they were 30 years ago.
Right.
But I think that really, as much as we rely on our schools to prepare our kids, it's really the job of the parents to take on a good bit of that. Now, maybe not necessarily the formal education part of it, because we're not all equipped to do that. But there's no reason these parents can't be helping facilitate what it is their kids want to learn how to do. And that's mm-hmm. the point that I was making when we got cut.
Yeah, my kids, both of my kids were issued a Chromebook. So our county schools issued out Chromebooks to all of the kids. And then for the kids that did not have internet access, well, the schools provided internet access. So you could go to the parking lot, park in the parking lot, log on to the school's internet, and basically sit in your car all day long, which I kind of disagreed with that. I was like, well, gosh, you know, why are you going to make me sit in my car all day long with the gas and the air conditioner on if it's 100 10 degrees outside.
Yeah.
You know, kind
that's
of.
That's not.
So.
See what they're trying to do there? Like, our school was providing school lunches. I'm like, if I'm not sending my kid to school, I'm not sending them to lunch. But it was really good for the kids.
Right.
Have another option. Mm-hmm. Comcast, though, just if this does get aired, does have a, and I know because we've used it, they have a program where it's $9.95 internet, which I know still isn't doable for some people. Trust me, I've been in that position too. But for those who can afford the $9.95 per month, it's a super basic internet. And when I say basic, it actually runs a lot of bandwidth. Like, we've done lots of different things on it. And they provide that to anyone who receives any type of government assistance, whether it be through Zoom. So just wanted to throw that out there for anyone who has Comcast in their area to check it out, Internet Essentials.
Yeah, and we got really good internet here. So I think our connection, we have a fiber optic connection in our house. So we have 100 megabytes per second. We got super fast internet here. And, you know, and it makes me wonder about the kids that are left behind, those that, you know, don't have the internet, their computer's super slow, not really technologically savvy. Believe it or not, there are some kids that, you know, don't have iPads. You know, they didn't get phones. They don't have those types of things. And that's a very key point right there, especially the lower income families, for example. You know, are those the kids being left behind? So it kind of leads me to the final question here before we end this particular interview is, is the education system unbreakable?
Oh, well, I have to say the overall, yes, they are. I mean, I watched, even in our lower income areas here, it took them a little longer. It took them, they needed extra help. Maybe the equipment wasn't as snazzy or fancy as an iPad. Like, our kids we have leased iPads or borrowed. I don't know how that works, but they're leased. Mm-hmm. And I told them I didn't want one coming home because I'm like, I don't have $800 to replace an iPad if something happens to this thing. Mm-hmm. Keep his 10-year-old computer and log in to Zoom. But I think that overall, as a country, we really stepped up. We really saw a lot of people working at something that was a complete surprise and unexpected. Mm-hmm. It's really what Unbreakable isn't about, never having hard things happen or never feeling like you're broken. It's about what you do, about not staying down right after you get kicked down. It's about getting back up. And you really can't know whether or not you're unbreakable unless you have things attempt to break you, right? And I think all in all, everything was not perfect. I don't see how we could expect it to be. But I really saw so many people in so many different communities stepping up and helping each other the best that they could. And our teachers were phenomenal. We don't live in a high income neighborhood whatsoever. But there was that there's got to be that air of humbleness and being able to ask for help.
Right.
Component of becoming unbreakable. It's not just pow, 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 plow through all the time, because I've done that myself. And I know we've had some conversations about that. A key component mm-hmm. about becoming and staying unbreakable is really.
Mm-hmm. Awesome. Absolutely great conversation. Thank you very much, Bonnie, and see you in the next episode.